Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Okay, something happened, as sometimes happens with Blog Talk. The signal gets cut. The good news is these are almost always preserved. And so that episode, we'll just cut that. We'll just continue the third hour now. So let's get to, I'm going to play you a little. I don't know if the Santa Rosa piece went before. Let me just play you a couple of minutes of Santa Rosa volunteers on the Declaration of Independence, and that'll allow us a couple minutes to get Chappie here, and we'll continue on with things as if nothing happened. So we'll have two episodes that we'll be able to just, you know, I hate it when it happens because that doesn't allow for us to really, you know, get a good solid show. And I love the first couple hours. I mean, we're covering all kinds of good ground. But let me play this for you now and be back in just a couple minutes. This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery, December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction, so that you would learn to hate your country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever, because they came from a power higher than government. That we the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers. All right, so we're back. Life is, you know, somewhat crazy and chaotic at Blog Talk Radio every once in a while. The good news about Blog Talk Radio is that you can kind of start an instant episode. You know, so if there's a problem, you cancel, you close down one, and then it becomes a podcast, and you start another one. At least they were nice enough to shut me down at the top of the hour break, you know, so that I could actually get back to it. So I don't know how much of my previous thing was played. I'll put an announcement. But so I ended the previous episode. Now I start the new one. And, of course, this will appear on Blog Talk for anybody that looks. They'll go, oh, back live. So you can actually start a new episode live. You don't have to wait, you know, and here we are. So let's get back to Chappie, who I do owe a theme to, same as Shirley, who was on the show earlier, and we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. So yeah, let's get into it. We were at CPAC with Jonathan. You know, maybe he'll call back, maybe not, to see if he has an update. But So you had a topic you wanted to talk about too, and you can tell folks about yourself too, because you're still, you know, relatively new around here, and folks might not know everything that you're up to. Welcome back to
that. Hey, good morning, Greg. Good morning. Yeah, you had me worried there. I thought maybe we went off the air. I thought the Russians were trying to come hack us, but.
Yes, for broadcasting against the Brandon administration, the FBI, KGB. For those of you guys in the FBI, KGB who are listening, why don't you be like everybody else? Just call the show. You want to know what I think? Listen to the show. You want to influence what I think and try and talk to me? Call the show, 215-383-3832. We do not discriminate against government stormtrooping, you know, Nazi-like agents. It's okay. So just feel free. Just call us up. We'll have a nice chat. Okay. And if you don't hear from me next week, you know why.
And I might be with you right next to you. So.
Oh, we're all going to be together in the gulag, dude. I mean, we're all going to be in the gulag. Don't worry about it. That's going to go, yeah.
Well,
so anyway, Josie's back. I'll make her line live so she can join us. And then what I want to do is, but I want you to start. And then, like I say, Josie's here too, but I want to have her be able to comment as well. Josie, welcome back. I figured it out, start a new episode. They cut us off, and here we are. All right, Chappie.
I don't know. Did your thing got cut off the radio?
Yeah. I tried calling into the show myself, and when I couldn't get in, that's when I knew that there was a block in the program,
man.
I just ended that episode. And hopefully that'll be podcast because we talked about some really cool stuff, you know, including your comments, and now we're back. But I got Chappie with gun tech competitions and, you know, that fabulous chat we had last week. Was it last week? It was last week, wasn't it? With Gatlin
last
Johnson?
Week, yep. Last week.
That was amazing.
With Gatlin Johnson.
He was great.
And we're probably going to do, another interview with him after Worlds as well.
Okay.
Josie,
you had a comment real
quick? Quickly.
Yeah.
I don't have internet at the house, so I'm going to listen, you know, that's why I called, because I want to continue listening, okay? Because I cannot get through the radio thing, internet. All right, thank you. I'm going to mute myself. Bye.
Maybe we have an internet problem here. Yeah, maybe that's what cut the signal. Maybe we have an internet, because Josie's in Milton where I am. And so maybe there's an issue with the internet, and that's why we had an issue. Who knows? Anyway, go ahead and tell me. You start again. Sorry. It's a little crazy this morning, as usual. Yeah.
I think it's a start of Red Dawn, Greg. Start of Red Dawn. So,
I do show the Russian accent. I do this to please, you know, soon-to-be occupiers. So from now on, we speak in the Russian accent. Здравствуйте, Chappie. Go ahead. Tell me about gun rights that we don't have in former Soviet Union. Please, feel free. Proceed, comrade. Friendly.
Well, here in America, where we're free and we have the Second Amendment. So, anyway, Greg, we're
going
to do something a little different this week. We're going to actually talk about, because we talk about, you know, training, stress of training, and, you know, the importance of owning a firearm, and along that comes training. So we're going to talk about the different type of instructions out there, the type of instructors and stuff that's out there, so that everybody doesn't just, you know, there's not just a one and done type instructor for every shooter. So
this is a great topic, by the way. This is really important. I'm glad you're doing it.
So the first thing is, when you're looking for an instructor, is where did you find this instructor at? Did you find them on social media? Were they referred by a friend? Are they a paid instructor at your range? Are they a contract instructor at your range? Or are they a professional shooter that makes additional money by traveling around and doing special seminars and stuff like that? There's some plus and minuses with all that as well, though. You know, if it's a referral, you're probably going to, from a friend, you're probably going to be more likely to get the inside scoop if it's a good instructor, bad instructor. Travel instructors, sometimes you're paying either for the brand. And when I say the brand, you're paying for the person to come teach you that is famous in one way or another. Are they famous because they're a famous competitive shooter? Are they a prior retired special operations veteran? Are they teaching you more of the tactical side of shooting? Are they teaching you the basics? Are you getting instruction from somebody like, let's say, JJ Rukaza, who's a grandmaster in USPSA, so you're trying to get more of, hey, let me work on my competition techniques? So those are some things to consider when you're trying to reach out and find an instructor. And then there's some other things you need to look at yourself. What kind of shooter are you? Are you a new shooter that just got a firearm? Are you a shooter that's experienced with firearms, but now you want to take it to the next level as far as self-defense, maybe competition shooting, and now you need some instruction to get better? Of course, it comes down to, are you a male or female? You know, that plays a big part too. And sometimes there's, you know, male ego that goes involved. I've seen a lot of times, actually, when it comes to instruction, females make the best students because they'll listen. And then sometimes men make the worst students because, you know, we're kind of
they don't listen.
said Heather. Yeah, we don't listen. We don't, like, you know, you can't, well, I already know everything. You can't tell me what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Also comes your age. You know, is your mind still moldable? Are you a younger shooter? Are you, again, that's older people. Are we stubborn, set in our ways? And then plus, because of your age, are there any, you know, physical restrictions that come along? And stuff like that. So, but now let's talk about the type of instructor. So this is where it gets kind of fun.
Okay, you want to hold up for a second? I got some questions on this, or do you want to wait for the end?
Yeah, actually.
Because this is a great topic. And the reason I love this topic is because I used to teach flying. And I wrote a book called The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. And I think the second chapter is how to pick a good instructor. And so what people don't realize is that you can be completely turned off the most fun thing in the world if your instructor sucks. You know, and just because somebody's a good shooter or a grand national champion does not necessarily translate into the fact that they're going to be a good instructor, because there is a psychology of teaching. You have to watch your student. You have to verify that you're learning. And I imagine the same flaws that are in flight instructors are also in shooting instructors. They give you procedures. They beat you over the head with them. And it's up to you to sort of, you know, figure out why these procedures exist. They just want you to repeat them. That's called rote learning. That's the level of learning. The next one would be understanding, where you actually understand what you're doing, you know, and then application, where you can apply what you learned. These are the laws of learning from Reginald Thorndike, who's beaten into me when I did my instructor training. And the top level is correlation. So in other words, you take what you learned and you can apply it somewhere else. And so what we found is most flight instructors are at the rote level. Do this. Why? Because I said so. And students would come to me on checkouts, and they do things, and I ask them why they do that. And if they ever said, because my instructor said so, I said, okay, we got to have a chat. You know, you're not going to get out of here with me until you understand why you just did what you did. Why did you do that? You know, I had a student check, we're going for a takeoff, and they wrote the wind information on their hand, because the instructor told them right on their hand. I always thought that was stupid. Anyway, and he said, and then they took off, and they didn't even look at, they didn't use any crosswind technique, and we need a good crosswind. So, why are you doing that? I said, what happened to your crosswind technique? Well, you didn't tell me to use crosswind technique. Well, that's what you write down the winds for. You know, you have to have the foresight to look at the wind, you know, and say, oh, there's a crosswind. I'm going to use the crosswind technique. That's application. That's a higher level of learning. And the same exact thing, but that student had never been taught that. They only did crosswind technique when they were told to. Okay. See, that was the flaw. That's rote learning. Okay. And shooting's the same thing. So you have to be able to get to correlation. You want to go to the highest level of learning. So you want someone that's not only a good shooter, because you have to have the technical skills, but you also have to have the skills to teach, to transmit a message, to engage in communication, and to test that the information was learned by asking questions, by finding out, do they understand? Do they know why you keep the gun pointed downrange? Do they know why, you know, they're flinching, and maybe the problem is they don't have enough hearing protection. Maybe you need that. Well, I always use, you know, the foam earplugs plus the headset. Get the minimum distraction. You know, maybe they've had a bad day. Maybe they shouldn't be shooting that day. You've got to take all these things into account as an instructor, because you're responsible for them. You are the first person they see. The first instructor is so critical, because everything they do is going to be patterned on what they learned first. That's one of the laws of learning. That which is learned first is kept longest and is the hardest to break if it's learned incorrectly. So the whole idea of this is incredibly important to get a good instructor, not just a good instructor, but a good instructor for you. So you, as a student who wants to learn how to shoot, you have to know how you learn best. And match that with the instructor who teaches that same way. I got Jonathan and I got Pianca in the line, so we'll get to them in a bit. So, but Chappie, how am I doing?
Yes, so that's great. I actually brought up two things right there. A lot of instructors, you know, don't explain the why. Like you just explained, well, it's just because I told you. But they don't explain the why, so that doesn't get the student thinking also as well. And that's wrong. And also the student, if they don't understand the why it's being taught that way in flying and shooting, they could just be doing something like, let's say they do a procedure they do all the time. But for instance, like you said, there's crosswinds, but they're doing it because their instructor told them, and they don't understand the why you don't do this. You know, that's life or death. And then same thing, and I'm sure you've seen it as well too. Not every student is the same. One student may be a visual. One might be, you know.
I wrote a book on it, dude.
Just goes off.
I know.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. When I was an instructor in the Air Force, so same thing. You know, each student's different. There is not one all be all. So it's the same thing with shooting. And it probably goes the same way too. Just because a person's a good pilot doesn't always mean they're going to be a good instructor. Just because a person's a good shooter or anything in life doesn't mean they're always going to be a best teacher. Same with baseball. Not all baseball players make great coaches.
Yeah,
it goes both ways. So that kind of rolls into why, you know, why, I guess this actually is a good why is your instructor an instructor? Are they an instructor because they're trying to make some extra money? Is there another intent, for instance, which you've probably seen too, the advent of social media, the world is overpopulated with everybody is a tactical shooter these days. Everybody that's, and I'm retired military myself, but there's a lot of them that kind of use their prior experience as their resume. But that's all they use. You know, it's automatically assumed that you did A, B, or C in the military. You're great. But they really don't give anything else about what makes them a great instructor or what they're doing. They're kind of just selling their brand, as I say.
Yeah. I want to focus on that more. I just got to tell Jonathan that we'll get to him. And so please hang on. He's at CPAC right now, so I want to get to him there. But I want to get back to this whole idea that just because somebody is former Special Forces or former military, retired, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean, again, you really are looking for an instructor first, and someone, it's great to have someone that has a lot of technical, and they may be a great instructor for you after you have a couple of years of practice, you know, but for first, it's, you know, it's really hard to judge, and you got to really think about how you learn best. Anyway, we keep going this, but I'm going to take a break. I want to get Jonathan in and see if he has further details on CPAC, but yeah, go ahead.
You want to get Jonathan first and see if he's waiting?
Okay. Let's do that. Let's bring him on here real quickly. The reason we're a little disorganized at this point is because the episode cut out. We're not sure why it cut out, so I started a new one and we're back. But we're kind of in the middle of Jonathan's chat from CPAC. So do you have some more details for us, sir?
Well,
anything else
not
happening?
Not necessarily. I mean, depending upon where I lost you, although I will, and I hate to cut into somebody else's segment, but I will say that the billboard next to my hotel advertises shoot a real machine gun. So I know I'm in Florida, not in and I've, everyone's got a business card on the on their seats here about a big gun show here, gun manufacturing here in Florida, where you can go and shoot lots of things. So it's a bit different from Northern Virginia in the D.C. Shadow there. But I was just finishing up. Of course, I just ducked in to hear Marco Rubio gave a very short They didn't give him very much time, but he talked about
that's interesting.
Ukraine. No, it is, because they gave him a very short time, and then went into a video recording. So they really could have given him more time. They also have a sign up saying no electioneering, like, you know, and I want to say, you know, let's go.
That many conservatives in the same place, and you can't campaign. Oh, please. How the new candidates get known.
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, it's probably for the IRS. But anyway, but he did say, Rubio did point out how whatever you think about what we should have done or the weakness or whatever, he says we're being inspired by the Ukrainians who are fighting back, 70-year-old men or whatever taking up arms, which they, like the, we talked earlier, they should have had all along, but they're passing out. Apparently, a small Russian military ship pulled up into a river. I didn't catch exactly. He assumed we knew about it. I don't have CNN. I don't have Fox or CNN at my hotel. And the military ship was blasting out over the loudspeaker. This is Russian territory or whatever. And the Ukrainians, as Rubio said, it responded in, quote, French, and told them what they could do with it. So he portrayed it in his brief speech as an inspiring thing of people fighting for freedom, whereas here we don't have to risk our lives, not yet. You know, we're not being shot at. He just made an appeal that we should all fight for our freedoms. And, of course, that, I think, dovetails with our Second Amendment freedoms, too. And yeah,
that's the whole
purpose
of the show. We fight for freedom in all kinds of different fronts. It's not just, you know, it's not just in foreign countries, and it's not just, you know, with guns. And this is the point I really want to make clear that, you know, we can write the bills. We can work with the laws. There's so many things we can do on so many different fronts that the firearm is like the last ditch. But if you're back in the 1700s and you've got an occupying army sitting right there, you know, in your town, then that's pretty much the only thing you've got left, because you have no government. You have no structure. You have no other outlets, you know.
It is, but it's the nature of humans to procrastinate, and that's the last, you know, that's not when you want to deal with it long before it gets to that point. And it's not human nature, but it needs to be. It's wisdom.
Okay.
Anyway, so I don't want to interrupt too much more.
Okay,
I was cut off. Well, I kind of need to do something, so I was cut off at some point about Mike Lindell. I don't know where I lost you, but
I heard most of it.
But
well, the only thing
I don't know what happened, but I could, when I called back in, I couldn't get in, so I don't know what was going on.
Hey, listen, I couldn't get back in. I tried calling in just on my cell phone. Yeah, so here's what I would – my only suggestion is that when you see people like Mike Lindell, if they have anybody else with them, talk to them. Talk to the number twos and threes that nobody knows. You know, see if you can get some contact. Talk to, you know, get cards or whatever you have, or get you know, contact information for them, because that's going to be a better bet. You're not going to reach Mike Lindell. I know, I've tried. And I know his number. I actually know one of his number two people, you know, and I still can't reach him, you know. So we'll get there. But that's it. Did you have any success with, and Chappie, we'll get to you. Any success with any of the reporters for One American News, Newsmax, or Fox?
That's what
anybody
I
want to talk
I do
to
not
us?
See One American. I do not see One American News here, which is disappointing, because they have, you know, but what I was starting to say, I think when I was cut off, is that Radio Row is different here than in years past I've seen, because there is a lot of television and they're broadcasting live. So they're in the middle of their show. It's not like people just sitting around in years past where you could just chat with them. They're like Fox Nation here is broadcasting the whole time. I tried to get their attention, and I had to print out a letter and give it to them. But it's not as casual as it used to be, where you could just chat with people. They're actually doing their show.
Maybe I was there one of the last good years back in 2018. Okay, well, let me go back to Chappie.
All right, so I'll let you go then. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. We'll catch you next week, and we'll get details. We'll get all kinds of details.
All right, great.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, Jonathan. All right, so that's interesting. Before we get back to instructors, which is critical, Chappie, do you have a comment on Ukraine, anything based on what we said earlier, or any of your own observations of where you think this might be going?
Well, kind of goes with instructing. You know, they kind of – had the foresight of seeing Russia invade, so they were already, you know, teaching the populace how to defend themselves.
How do you do that quickly, though? Given the time they had, how do you instruct people? You know, do you just do some basics and say here? I mean, what could they do in the time available?
Basically, you know, of course, the basics: how to operate the firearm, and then just the overall safety, making sure they're not flagging each other. You know, and I saw they were teaching basic tactics, you know, how to defend a house, defending a room. So they just gave them the quick Reader Digest version and kind of threw them to the wolves. But that's better than nothing, you know, than having Russians kind of invade. So honestly, it kind of makes me happy that, you know, they're out there, they're wanting to do this. They're not just going to roll over, and that they're seeing that you do need to have firearms to defend your country, whether you're in the military or a civilian, you're going to defend your land, and that's a good thing. So I'm glad that, you know, the thing is, too, everybody was seeking that instruction, and the government in Ukraine was giving out that instruction. So, again, that's a good thing. They're wanting to fight for their country, and they're seeing the need that, hey, we can't just – we're not going – negotiating is not always going to win battles, that you're going to actually have to take up arms and defend your country and your family. You know, that's the whole basis of what, you know, we have the Second Amendment for. So,
yeah, it's interesting that they are no one's fighting for the government. You know, I mean, the government's pretty much corrupt, whether it was our corruption or Russian corruption. So it's interesting they're fighting for their country. And that doesn't always mean fighting for your government. Now that we have this, to take a break, I'm going to get Pianki in the conversation, too. And then we'll get – do you have the whole hour, Chappie, by the way, first of all? Can you stick around for a while?
I sure do.
Okay, good. Then I won't be shortchanging your subject. Pianki, welcome to the show, sir.
My head is swimming with fiddle music. Oh.
Fiddle music? What, like Fiddler on the Roof?
I hear you when I'm here.
If I were a wealthy man. Anyway.
You know, isn't it just miraculous how when times of peril come, the United States and the powers to be want to give other citizens weapons, but they want to take ours.
Oh, that's fascinating. You know, there was, in fact, yeah. I think I made some kind of a comment earlier this week. No, this is a good thing to talk about. I want to get everybody, we got Josie, if she can talk. She might be busy doing stuff, but still on the line here. Chappie, same thing too. Brandon, you know, there was a report, there was John Lott on One American News talking about how Brandon wants to get rid of all semi-auto firearms at the same time as he's probably praising the Ukrainians to be armed so they can fight the Russians. That is an outrageous example. I mean, hypocrisy is bad enough, but when it's this blatant, you know, it doesn't get worse than that. You know, we want to defend Ukraine. We want to object to Russia going to Ukraine while Brandon's invited 2 million illegals into our country. They want to arm the Ukrainians, but take away our guns here. This is a fascinating argument.
Well, Brandon told the Ukrainians that if you want the $2 billion, you better fire the prosecutor. I wonder how the Ukrainians feel now.
Yeah, well, they know about Brandon. You don't see them going, oh, U.S., please help us. Brandon, come to the rescue. Nobody said that I've seen. No, not working. Chappie?
Nope, they're fighting for themselves.
Yeah,
they know they're in it for themselves. They're not going to wait and depend on anybody else and then have their other country's ideologies.
Well, you're in the military. How does that current military feel? They were pledged to – well, first of all, the military under Brandon. You know, there was a surrender to the Taliban. We lost $82 billion worth of weapons that, as Jim Dykes was saying earlier, could have easily been shipped to Ukraine or at least, you know, found their way there pretty quickly. Right. You know, he's got all these problems here. He's basically ruined our country. This is the government choosing the government. This is why you can't trust government to pick government. You know, that's why you have to have elections that are honest and let the people do it, because we know that's the only way, one of the few ways we can consent to be governed. Other than when Action Radio takes over and we start writing our own laws. But the point is that this in the military, what does the military think of this? Do they want to do something? Do they want to say, hell no, this isn't our fight? You know, the people currently serving now, what's the opinion there? What was your opinion? You know, yeah, we'll start with that.
I really can't speak on everybody else. Of course, I retired 3 years ago. Any type of conflict, I think I knew we were always wanting ready to go. Like, for instance, when Kosovo was pretty big in the 90s and everything, we wanted to go help. So I think the attitude is everybody wants to go help and be part of it. That's honestly what I think everybody still wants to do. Now, then the other side of me, it's a different military, you know, than when I served, you know, it's especially towards the last few years. You know, and not just the average person served, the leadership's changed. So I don't know. I think it's 50-50. I think you got some of the older crowd that's been in a while that served during the 90s that could possibly still be in. They're ready to go. Then you got some of the young gung-ho kids that do want to go. But I think there's a lot of them, you know, that join for college that just they don't want to be a part of it.
They just want the benefits. 50-50. I think I saw a movie on that.
Yeah,
jump for the benefits. I don't want to go to war. What are you talking about? I was just here for the college. Yeah, that's scary too, because
exactly.
Those people might, your life might depend on those people.
It's you know, it's a different, you know, you remember the time during the Cold War and training, and it's changed, you know, and everything went out the window. At least a lot of the military changed at the end of the Cold War, and then we're in that in between phase, and then after 9/11, it went to a whole different front, different way of fighting. It's almost like we'd have to go back to Cold War training and tactics. So,
well, military was always physical. You know, you had to carry the gun, you had to drive the tank, you had to fly the airplane, you had to, you know, man the ship. You know, and then it became very technical. You know, drones could fly independently. You know, you could have remote firing operations. You could have so much done by computers and satellites, cyber warfare, all these other things. So the high tech, the computer, really changed warfare. And it for a large extent, it's taken people out of it. because so much of the real warfare now is not done with guns. It's done with hacking and computers and stealing and cyber attacks and espionage and all these other kinds of things. Yeah. That's the war. So the war is not. So the soldier has gone from, you know, the biggest, baddest, strongest, you know, person with a gun, you know, hiking up, taking the hill, to the biggest, baddest nerd with the biggest glasses, you know, punching the right keys. That's a huge change. And the kind of person that's in the military that is going to be a keyboard warrior, literally, compared to someone who was a physical, you know, storm the beaches, you know, warrior, that's going to change the military, I think, for the better. I'd rather have people be able to, you know, defend our nation, you know, from behind a computer. Because it's better for them. I mean, they're not going to risk life and limb, and I don't like to do that unless absolutely necessary. And most of what we've done since World War II has not been absolutely necessary. You know, at least you're on the saving end of it. You're on the rescue end of it, right? Weren't you an aerosmedic, if I remember? Mm-hmm. What was your position? Yeah. Okay. So, you're saving lives. That's a good thing. You know, so it's a whole different well, what are the changes that you see in terms of technology? What happened from – well, and I'm curious which president was there when you went in. So where did you start your career?
So when I went in, President mm-hmm. Clinton was in office.
Wow. Oh. Now we know how old he is.
Yeah. 1994, I came in right out of high school and retired in 2018. President Trump was president. Now, here's a funny story. I stayed past 20, and I stayed 24. And, mm-hmm. you know, honestly, part of the reason I didn't want President Obama on my retirement certificate.
Oh, that's interesting. The things we do. Yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So, but could you see radical differences in the military depending on who was the commander in chief?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it must have been huge from Clinton to Bush to Obama to Trump to not having a president.
For instance, you know, the different smart bomb technology, changes in the aircraft, you know, and you probably know that too, you know, going to the glass cockpit. All digital and, mm-hmm. you know, the avionics change, medical change too, even the way of thought from the tourniquet, you know, it used to be tourniquet was like the last resort. And a tourniquet was kind of like the mousetrap, you know, it's been changed many times, but now they have the soft tee where the mm-hmm. call has changed with that technology. And now our way of thinking is like, hey, in that situation, tourniquet first. And it has saved a lot of lives by putting on the tourniquet first and press and move on. And it's saved limbs on a lot of people. That's changed quite a bit. Definitely in computer age, that has changed a lot throughout the military. You know, as the whole time I've heard in the Air Force, and we're going to a paperless Air Force, which never works because the system always went down. But that satellite technology, you know, having the GPS for everybody, that helps, mm-hmm. that helps a lot for people doing land navigation, you know, going from compass to maps now, GPS.
I took a lot of flying because my students couldn't get lost. You know, Pianki can relate to this. When I started, just as, you know, date myself, when I started flying, I'm 16 years old. I'm by myself flying around New England in a Cessna 150. I had a chart, a compass, and a watch. You know, and a clipboard with some checkpoint. That's how you go around New England. You know, and it worked fine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I took off, opened my flight plan, and landed and called up and closed my flight plan. But in between time, nobody knew where I was. You know, sometimes not even me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was an adventure. And I think in many ways, I'm wondering if the quality of the soldier, this is the beauty of the show. We get to go off on these weird tangents. I'm wondering if the quality of the soldier changes because they don't have that I don't know where I am, you know, mentality, and I got to figure it out.
Yeah. I think so a little bit because I think sometimes we're too dependent on technology. Mm-hmm. You know, in most military schools, they would teach even, you know, in the medic course, they teach you the basics, how to work on something before let's use technology to do something just in case the technology mm-hmm. goes down or it fails or your backup plan fails. And you mentioned the flight plan. I've seen that change, you know, where, like you said, you used to have to map out your flight plan, called in, and now you can do everything digital and, you know, and just make sure you hit your checkpoint.
Oh, the flight plan's stored. It's already in the airplane.
Yeah.
So the airlines, they already have predetermined flight plans. And I'm wondering, there's a loss of skills with that too. So getting back to where we started our conversation with firearms instructors, instruction, has that become much more rote? Are they going by algorithms and programs and, well, we think this is our computer says this is how people learn best. Have they automated the instruction process? Just to bring us back to where we started.
No, I think they're still kind of using the same basics and fundamentals. It's just maybe the algorithm is a little bit, and honestly, which is because this is just the way the American way is how to make money. So,
okay.
As long, for instance, the golden standard for instructing, with, you know, when you're looking for an instructor, is what certification they have. And the golden standards typically, are they NRA certified? Are they NRA certified instructor? Which might not always mean that they're a best instructor and they know what they're doing, but at least it has that structure of how they're supposed to teach. But what I've been told by a lot of people that take the course, NRA really focuses on how to make how you make money so that the NRA makes money. So it seems like a big pot.
Gee, what I was thinking more about military instructors, how they had changed. Are they using more pre-programmed stuff? But we can talk about, civilian gun world for people that are looking for instructors, because that's my thing. I look for someone that that knows a whole lot, can teach a whole lot, and that will listen to me before and answer my questions. Those are the big ones, you know, for me.
No, yeah. As far as military instruction, let's see, it hasn't changed much other than, you know, I think the visual aspect of teaching before, you know, you used to have somebody draw on a chalkboard their version of what the firearm is supposed to look like in the mechanics for now, as far as technology. Now we can have a video, and that actually helps a lot of people out. So,
the way
they teach with technology has helped. You know, like I remember, like, when I came in, they're more or less using the old flip chart. Okay, here's this, here's that, and you're just lost, where now you can sit there, oh, okay, that's how you know. That's how it's done, you know, how to manipulate the firearm, watching somebody do it, you know, in action versus the instructor, like, okay, here's a perfect world, here's how it happens and stuff like that. So, and then back to this instruction too, a lot of the firearm instructors are using a thing that's called like the coach app. Basically, they'll video their student what they're doing, and then they can break it down, just like, you know, football coaches do, say, hey, you know, because you can tell a person to, hey, hold your grip this way, and they're not going to do it. But if you can show them on video, here's what you're doing, they can see it and visualize, okay, that's what I'm doing wrong. Then you show them, tell them to hold it this way, videotape it, and then compare the two, and they can see the big difference versus, because, you know, again, the shock of being sometimes a student and that holding that firearm for the first time or what have you, there's a lot to take in all at once, just like flying probably. Well, so.
Oh yeah, first time students, they're our trip. That's why we have fun with them the first time, you know, and we take them up and we play with the airplane a little bit. And I used to do wingovers, which is really kind of cool. It's perfectly legal. Then the 60 degrees of bank and 30 degrees of pitch, you know, so you keep within your FAA regs, but you can still pitch up fairly sharply and kind of have the wing appear to sort of move over the top of the other wing. That's called wingover. And so you're kind of up, and then you start this very graceful turn and come down again. That's what sold most of my students. I want to be able to do that. Is that okay? Great. You know, and so you have a little fun.
You can do that with your 150.
Well, you can't really do it in a 150. You know, the best plane for a wingover was a Cardinal, because a Cardinal is one of the cleanest airplanes out there. No struts, no gears already up. You know, you get a little airspeed, and you pitch up and just gracefully ease it into your 60-degree bank as you come over the top and come down the other side. So you go from a very high-speed entry to usually maneuvering speed, they say, but sometimes it'll be at the top of the green arc if it was a perfectly smooth day. And then up you go, and then you come down the other side. At the top of the arc, you're really slow, and bottom of the next one, you got your speed back, and hopefully you reverse 180 degrees, and you go back up and do another turn. It's really fun. You can have fun in airplanes, but I want to do aerobatics. I want to get the full, you know, parachute, aerobatic, jet, whip it around the sky kind of thing. Pianki, you have a comment?
Well, you're from the days of electronic lights on the light field. We had to put out buckets with firewood in it and light them up on the plane. We could hear them.
Oh, no, I never landed to buckets. I never landed to buckets of firewood. You're right. You must be older than me. You know what we landed to in Concord? In Concord, we digress, Chappie. But in Concord, where I used to teach, Concord, California, north of San Francisco, there was a drive-in right next to the runway. So when they would show movies at night on the drive-in, I tell my student, we're like 400 feet, you know, we're on the ground in like 8 seconds, right? And so I tell my student, hey, what's playing in the drive-in? They look at the drive-in. And, of course, they veer off the runway. I said, where are you going? Huh? And then they'd have to, you know, immediately come back to the runway. I only do this when nobody else is around, right? So they'd be looking at the drive-in. Of course, they start heading for the drive-in screen, right? And so I said, are you sure you're going the right way? And they'd look back and then, where's the right? It's over there. Oh, damn. So they have to correct, right? And I said, and thus explains the use of distractions in the training process. So anyway, there's another law of learning called the law of intensity. Okay, there's all these laws of learning, right? So instructors learn the law of intensity. A vivid experience will be remembered more than one that's, you know, more casual and calm. So they always remember the drive-in experience. So I use that drive-in very effectively to tell students not to get distracted. Keep your mind on what you're doing. And I don't know. Do you do that, Chappie? Do you know the laws of learning I'm talking about? Use of distractions.
Yeah.
The law of recency. That which is learned most recently will be remembered best. The law of repetition. That which is practiced most will be remembered best. The law of intensity. You know, that the vivid experience creates a, you know, something memorable. You know, like I love the law of intensity. That was my favorite. You know, but those are things we use. You know, in order to teach more effectively. But yeah. So have fun with it. Yeah. But I remember first lesson.
You mentioned too.
All right, go ahead. You tell me.
As far as instructor, mm-hmm. you know, someone that's going to listen to you as well. I think that sometimes the problem nowadays with all these, I want to say like social media instructors, are they just selling themselves and their brand? Or are they actually there to listen to what the student wants to learn? Are they going to kind of tailor their instruction to their student or students, or are they just, you know, a big box brand instructor that's one way, that's the right way, and if you're not catching up and doing it, then you're left behind. And some of that, I think it goes back to what's the intent of the instructor? Are they just trying to sell their brand, you know, sell themselves? Again, you'll see a lot of that. So you got to be careful
motivation.
With the instructor.
Motivation's a big part of it. You know, what is the motivation of the instructor? It's a great thing to look into. Why are they doing this? You know, it's a good thing to ask. A lot of flight instructors are because they want to build hours. You know, and they don't really care what they. Well, they care at least a little bit, but a lot of times the main thing is to build hours because you can't build hours any other way because the students are paying for your flight time. The problem is you're not actually flying; you're teaching, which means and a good instructor is not going to touch the airplane until what I call just before too late, and that was my standard. Kind of crazy, but it works. But anyway, that and never create an emergency when you're trying to simulate one. That was my second big rule. But, so you want to give the students the maximum time to do that. The problem is, as an instructor, the more you teach, the lower your flying skills because you're not actually touching the airplane. You know what to do, but you haven't done it in so long that it becomes a problem. So it'd be a good thing to have firearms instructors actually be active shooters. Otherwise, they're going to lose touch too. Yeah, but motivation. Why is somebody, are they doing it for the money? Are they doing it for the ego gratification? Are they doing it because they're bored and, you know, they want to be deranged and they'd rather be earning money than spending it? I mean, you know, motivation is huge for why an instructor is doing what they're doing. And you can ask. People, I don't think people ask, though, do they? They don't really understand. They don't interview their instructors. Yeah.
No, and what I've observed, too, a lot with these tactical instructors is it seems like everybody wants to be famous nowadays.
Oh, that's
so, and the thing is they're not teaching anything different than, you know, what the other person, because they can't teach civilian tactics. So you're learning fundamentals, but that's where now it really breaks down to the micro process. Are they actually teaching you that stuff? Are they listening to you? Are they giving you good feedback? Mm-hmm. Or is it you're basically paying for their brand to say, hey, you took instruction from a retired Green Beret or SEAL or something versus, did you really learn anything? Or did you pay all this money for them to brag about themselves?
Yeah. Well, let's ask Pianchi how he learned to shoot.
In the industry, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Pianchi, how'd you learn to shoot?
With Daisy BB guns. You know, what should be incorporated with instruction today is simulators. Oh, you don't know what a Daisy BB gun is?
No, I was quoting a line from The Christmas Story with Peter Billingsley, where he got a Red Ryder Super BB gun and said, I don't get that, you shoot your eye out. It was an Andy Gunn film, and they took a perfectly good Christmas movie and worked an Andy Gunn message into it. It really sucks. It's like all the Lethal Weapon movies. They're all Andy Gunn. Everybody's got guns. You know, it's just,
but simulators. Do they use simulators quite often in your instructions where you can – where you can show a situation with a perpetrator coming to you and a perpetrator running from you so that the trainee would learn the difference between the two?
Good question.
Yeah, I've seen some instruction like that where like, it's on like a green screen and they'll put up a situation like you're getting carjacked or something and the person doesn't have a gun. You got that split second to make that decision. I've used some of that stuff before, but not instruction. I just used it as a demo. But yeah, there's instructors that teach that kind of stuff using the self-defense, like when you're
can people
shoot,
do that?
Not shoot.
I had that in customs when I did my brief stint after 9/11. I was a customs inspector before Department of Homeland Security decided that anybody over 30 was too old, and they hired all these 20-year-olds. I was 42 at the time, right? So anyway, so they kind of put me out to pasture. They said, for the next 20 years, you're going to sit in a booth and scan passports. I'm like, I don't think so. Anyway, but the firearms training was great. I mean, it really was. We did house clearing. We did all these kind of regular law enforcement stuff. But one of them was this scenario-based thing where they had the videos, and it was the shoot-no-shoot decision. And none of, if it was a shoot decision, were you accurate? And apparently I was pretty good at it, which was really nice to see. And those are split-second decisions, and they're fascinating. I would love to see the public get to do that and use those things. I wouldn't want criminals to do it because I don't want to make better criminals.
Yeah.
So there has to be some kind of screening process, and that's another problem with instruction. Do you have gangbangers out there, learning how to be better? you don't want that. Yeah. So that's a security question. But is it a good idea to use scenario based training like that for regular civilian folks? I would say yes, actually. As long as, like I say, we don't want to make better criminals out there. Okay, all right, yeah, go ahead. Tell me why.
Yeah, well, I'd say yes because to put them under that stress too, because you can only do so much on a static range, on a flat range, and then let's think about time, cost, and setup. But I think the more real you can do that scenario, it helps. That it's almost the same thing. I'm not sure if you ever seen the air traffic control towers where. They can program it, and it could be any airfield in the world. It's kind of the same situation. They can do that where they can, hey, let's put in the – oh, yeah, they actually on base here for the combat controllers, they have this air traffic control simulator where they go in, and it looks just like you're in a tower, and on the screens all around you, this big simulation, they can say, hey, let's put in O'Hare Airport, and it comes up. They can even do it, like, kind of live. So it puts them in that situation.
Really?
So I think
I never heard of that, but that makes sense. I think because we have airplane full motion simulators that bend and twist and make you feel like you're in a real plane, and they can simulate engine failures, natural disasters, hurricanes, locusts, volcanic ash. They can put anything in there. It's great.
But
it makes sense that they have traffic.
Realistic. But instead of just looking at a paper target and shooting a Pianki saying, you can now, okay, hey, you have a situation. What do I do here? This person has a gun. Is that a gun? Is it really a gun? Am I being attacked? Are they just being, are they really being hostile? So, yeah, I you're right. I think, honestly, that's good for the civilian market because it would make people be more responsible as a firearm owner than just, the Wild West. Everybody has a gun and not know how to use
it. Yeah, the Wild West wasn't
the
Wild West.
Were they a good shot?
Yeah.
Were they a good shot? On paper, but do they actually have the reaction, and are they actually thinking correctly under that stress and pressure?
Yeah.
So I think those are great things. And it goes that way too. They even have scenarios like that for competition shooting where they have the targets come up and everything else like that too. So that, then it goes back like we were talking earlier. Technology has improved everything from aircraft to military to firearms training. So
I want to run a dueling program.
Single
shot pistols. Let's do a dueling program. have a simulated duel. Put Aaron Burr on the other side. And I'm going to win. I'm going to reverse history and make me Alexander Hamilton, even though he's not one of my favorites. Go ahead, Pianki. We're having fun. We got about 10 minutes left. Let's enjoy it. Yeah.
I think that that you need to be simulation for police officers too, being that they coming under fire for the things that they've done.
So, yeah, they happen.
That's where it started too.
Yeah, I've done those.
Another thing. I think that criminals that's being investigated and being restrained, if they put up a resistance to that restraint, and they're eventually found to be guilty, they should have additional time tacked on, because it's that restraint that's putting the police officer in danger. It's that restraint. Not the restraint, but the resistance and the struggle and so forth. There should be additional time tacked on to anything that they receive upon finding guilty.
I think they do. It's resisting arrest or charges they're added all the time.
Arrest.
So I think that would probably already cover it, I would think. Yeah. Okay.
But they usually thrown out of court resisting arrest.
Well, they throw out the gun charges too. That's another thing that's interesting. You know, for the gangbanger things, the a lot of times the gun charge is the first one thrown out, whereas they're the one, because the gun charges aren't meant for criminals. You know, they're really meant for scaring the honest law abiding people into not owning guns, and not using them even if you do own them. That's the way it looks to me anyway. Chappie, more on instruction. Anything else you wanted to cover on that?
Just another thing that kind of goes instruction, because now you're seeing so many instructors up there. What I want to get at is, what's your budget and what you're paying for? You'll see anything from, $45 for an hour up to, I've seen outrageous prices for $800 for a class. Now,
what? Also, I'm in the wrong business.
Prices. Yeah, I am. Well, but you need to look in depth into those prices. Does that include ammo? Does it include, if it's an all-day thing, does that include lunch and everything? And, again, research your instructor to make sure you're getting that full money's worth. Because sometimes, again, a lot of these instructors are trying to use their prior background as their resume and as their means of saying, hey, this is worth it because I did A, B, and C. But is it really worth that cost? Are you really paying for good instruction for that cost? So look at what your budget is. And also, look how far are you willing to travel to? Because not everybody lives near a range. Not everybody's range has instructors or brings in special instructors. So put that in part of your budget too. How far are you willing to travel? Are you going to have to stay in a hotel? How much is gas, food, and all the other stuff? So look how much you're willing to travel. And then, again, break down that budget of, okay, I'm paying $250 from this instructor. Am I getting the same instruction that somebody that charges $100? Kind of compare, the apples and oranges, but really break down to see what you're actually getting for that cost. So that's what a big takeaway I think I really want to take for everybody today is, look at the cost and look at your instructor and what your intent of training is and what you want to get out of training.
Yeah, and you have to direct the training. In other words, you don't, as a student, you don't obviously have the knowledge. That's why you go to an instructor, but you still have to direct the training. I instructed my student pilots that you're pilot in command. You're going to start thinking like pilot in command. And part of that responsibility is to ask me when you don't understand something. You have to tell me, so that I know what you know and what you don't know. And I'm going to test you anyway. But the thing is, it's not a problem to not know something, and it's not a problem to question me, because I need you to understand why you're doing what you're doing. That's critically important. The other thing, too, that we didn't talk about is when instruction's over. Guitar instructors are famous for this. They'll teach you one song, they'll teach you another song, but they never give you, the keys to the kingdom. They never tell you, that there are four chords that can play like 90% of the songs out there. They never show you the basic open chords. I teach guitar in four lessons. All right? I can teach you to play guitar in four lessons. Now, those lessons are 6 months apart. Okay, because I want you to practice. But I can teach anyone to play guitar. I can show you the open chords and how to find them and where they are on a key on a songbook, and how to relate the charts, the finger charts to where your fingers go to make the chords. 6 months later, I'll teach you the bar chords. 6 months later, I'll teach you the scales. And 6 months later, I'll teach you, lead solos, pentatonics, and that kind of stuff. And the reason I can do that in four lessons is because I can give you enough in one lesson, to carry you for about 6 months of practice. And, of course, there are other things that's frustrating, talk to me in the meantime. But that's my program for guitar instruction, four lessons. Instructors, if they're trying to make money at this, they want to keep you as long as possible so you're never done. You're never done with your instruction. You're never done.
Are they always trying to sell you on top of another? Oh, you should also take my other course. It's only $350. Oh, do this. You should do this. You're never going to – it's kind of like going to chiropractic. They give you one thing, now you got to get adjusted for something else.
So I actually like chiropractic. I wouldn't be walking without chiropractic. That's a whole different topic. But I also know when I'm done. You got to call a limit to it. It's like, okay, I've learned what I wanted to learn. I'm done. And I think the over instruction is just as bad. Same with students. I say, you're done. Get out of here. Go fly. Come back and see me in 6 months or a year, and I'll see where you are, and let's work on other stuff. But that's, I think, a responsible instructor has to know when they're done.
Yeah. Or in like you mentioned that too. Are they also? Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've probably seen it in flying a little too. Are they just using this to draw you in to sell you something else, or to get additional, to purchase additional training? Yeah, you need to know when it's done, and are you just dumping in money because that's what the instructor wants you to do? Are they really teaching you? Are they really getting to that end point, or is it just them to fill their pockets? So.
And are they teaching you how to teach yourself and how to evaluate yourself and how to check yourself? It's like me. I've been shooting for a while. I know I need a lesson. Okay, so that's my responsibility, you know. But this is part of learning, is to learn your own limitations. Good man's got to know his limitations. Clint Eastwood.
And another thing,
I've seen this.
In the competition world too. Make sure that what your instructor is telling you is actually honest and legit, because you know instructors. Some of these are going to feel you like, hey, you're the best instructor thing I have. I think you should do this, this, and this. Talk to another student. Are they giving them the exact same verbiage, you know, just so that they draw you back? Or are they actually genuine in what they're telling you? Because
you're my favorite student.
What you should do here is do this homework. You should buy my ammunition and spend 1,000 rounds a week in this, because I see you doing this. But are they telling that to all their students, or is it really genuine towards you? That's I've noticed that quite a bit lately.
Well, the interesting
ammo shortage.
Yeah, but if customers, and that's what you are, if customers of lessons would say, at what point am I done? You know, and just ask them, where do you think, you know, where am I going to be at the end of my training? That might freak them out. That might be very interesting to as a question.
Oh yeah.
When are we done? Yeah, exactly. Same thing with guitar. You know, I taught flying, and I could say, okay, you're done. You can come back. But what was interesting, I guess the last question I have is on the regulations. You don't quite have the same in firearms, but the FAA has a series of requirements I think are stupid, which is why I wrote a book, you know, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction, basically saying the new way to teach, I think I've got a better system. It was all based on pilot in command, on the student responsibility, on thinking, on planning, on decision-making, way ahead of anything else in the program, which is basically rote training. And so it becomes, you know, a matter of being a good student. You have to define what's a good student. You have to be as good a student as the instructor is an instructor, and you have to find an instructor that will treat you as a good student, that you are here to learn certain things. You're going to question everything. You're going to figure it out. You have a goal. You want to accomplish so much. And then you want to have an endpoint. So all these things, you know, go into it. And most people, they treat the firearms instructors like doctors. Oh, tell me what's wrong with me. You know, I'm not going to ask. I'm going to trust everything you say, and it's going to be godlike and wonderful. But there's no real certification for instructors, is there? And for competence. I mean, they don't have to pass a test or get a rating.
Not really. Like I said, the golden standard is typically, you know, the NRA certification, which, I mean, at least that's a good base. At least, you know, they went to instruction and have a type of certification. But just because, again, somebody was law enforcement or military isn't necessarily, oh, just because I did this, I'm a great instructor. That's not always the case. So I know at our range, for someone to be like an instructor on the staff or to be a contract instructor, they have to show us like their training and certification. And even if it is military training, we need to see that like from their training record. Because, you know, if it's not documented, it never happened. Same thing with, you know, flying. If it's not documented, it never happened too. So, because I'm sure you probably have people that, oh, hey, I'm a great flyer, let me be an instructor, but they might not have this probably required hours to be an instructor.
Well, it's tough to become a flight instructor. But what's interesting, and speaking of when Pianki was talking about simulation, that has to be used appropriately. I remember I would have students that would come to me, you know, and they're great at flying their mouse, you know, their mouse on a desk in a level, you know, lighted room that's even, that's not bouncing around, and it's not, you know, there's no reference, that has all the reference up and down. And it was really funny. They come to me and they say, Greg, I'm really good at instrument flying. I said, really? How? You don't have any instrument time in an airplane. No, really, I've been on my simulator. It's great. I got this program. I know how to work the instruments. I've flown the same approach 1,000 times. I'm great at it. I said, okay, well, what happens when we pick a different one? So the first thing I do is, all right, well, let's see how good your training is. You know, if you come to me and you say that, you know, sometimes you really have fun with students. It was terrible because I knew what was going to happen. And, you know, and I said, well, it's going to be raining tomorrow. Let's go fly tomorrow. Let's go fly in the rain, and we'll go have some fun. And you know, plan a course from here. We went usually from like Concord to Stockton, which is an easy flight. Stockton's wide open area, big valley. So because there are very few obstructions, the minimums are quite low. You know, it's like 200 feet on the instrument landing system, the ILS, which is sort of standard. But, you know, you get on 200 feet and you can't see the ground. Students are like, what's going on here? You know, it kind of freaks them out a bit. So as you can expect, most students, the minute they got into the clouds, had lost everything. All that training, all that mouse work, all that computer simulation went right out the window. And all of a sudden, they're like, well, where's up? Where, use your instruments. Well, but I feel like, no, use your instruments. Well, and then they'll start climbing. I said, why are you climbing? And I said, I'm not. Yes, you are. Look at your instruments. You know, and there was a whole emotional process we had to go through so that the simulation made sense. So simulation only makes sense when you know what you're simulating. You know, that's why it's good to go get your simulations, your law enforcement ones, you know, once you've actually been on the range for a while and you have an idea of how to operate your firearm and know the limitations. So simulation works, yeah, but you can't start with it. That's what I don't think. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Pianchi, got a, yeah. You want to weigh in on this, Pianchi? We got a few. Actually, I have more time, but I'm going to go because I want to keep to my 3 hours with Blog Talk. That's sort of my agreement with them.
That's the deal. Yeah, I wanted, you know, like I said. Oh, go ahead, Pianchi.
No, I was just going to say, see if I can tell a student that's been on a simulator, they're a little bit more familiar with what you're telling them to do. I've got to do that with my grandson here in a little bit, but I like simulators. And that's how I learned how to fly, really, going back to the Atari jumbo jet fighter. One thing about simulators, you can crash and get up and go to the kitchen and make a sandwich.
Yes, you can. Yeah. Yeah, but the only thing I was saying was that simulators, you don't know what you're simulating, you know, until you've actually been in the clouds. And so that's where I tend to find that simulator training falls apart. Now, once they've been in the clouds and they get back and land, I say, okay, now go try your simulator. Oh, yeah. You know, it's a whole different experience because now it's real. And that's real for them. But that's why I don't like starting with simulators. I like simulators for instrument training, you know, midway through. So, okay, now go practice. Now that you know what an approach looks like, now that you know what a holding pattern looks like, now that you know what these things look like. And what I used to do also, because in simulation, this is off track, Chappie, obviously we're talking flying here, but we have what's called a hood. And you got to wear the hood. All right, so the hood goes on, and all you can see are the instruments. You do that in the daytime, and you can still watch the sun go across the panel, and you get all these visual clues, and you can cheat. But the whole idea of the hood was that you'd fly, you know, expressly by the instruments. You know you're in a plane. You know you can only see the instruments, but you have no sensation of up, down, left, right. You know, you just fly an instrument. And so that was a whole lot of fun. But what I used to do is I took the hood off. And I said, okay, now we're going to fly these visually. So you see what a holding pattern looks like. You see what an approach to an airport looks like. Now you've got a visual reference. The visual reference. So then when you put the hood back on, the students knew where they were over the ground because they just seen it visually. So that kind of reinforcement, you know, makes a big deal. Same thing with shooting. You know, if you can see something visually, I guess with the shooting replays you're doing, with the videos, if you can see what you're doing, that gives you that visual reference, you know, that you combine with what you're actually doing. And anytime you combine visual with the other thing, it makes a big difference. Yeah, Pianchi.
Well, you just brought up about simulation. You know, you're the same thing.
Oh,
you'd rather go learn the firearm first before simulation because, again, like you mentioned too, we're in the airing protection and feeling the recoil. If they're really good on the simulation, this computer, you know, these Call of Duty kids, and then they get out there and they realize, oh, I'm not that great. I'm not really, you know, because all these people are like, oh, I'm awesome. I'm on Call of Duty. But then they get out there and none of them can barely run 10 feet without gasping for breath.
So. It's not all the time in video games. Yeah, that's funny. Well, yeah, real guns have recoil. Video games don't have recoil, do they? There's no recoil to a video game. Yeah, there will be, but not yet.
So I just wanted to bring something different this week, you know, talk about career. We've talked about
I appreciate it.
This and that, but, we'll keep doing stuff like this.
No, anytime you want to bring up something like this, this is fascinating. And this is something that people, as they bring more and more stories here on our Gun Friday, we should probably go here in just a minute. I'm going to see if Pianchi has a last comment, and then we'll go. But Chappie, great topic. Thank you for bringing it to us here today.
Thank you.
And then we'll get your contact stuff. Pianchi, any last points before we close down for the week and I get my website back?
Yeah, I want Chappie to keep up the good work.
There you go.
Oh, well, thank you. Appreciate it, Pianchi.
Yeah. So what's your contact stuff? Where do we find you, and do you have any competitions this weekend?
Well, on social media, I can be found at Chappie Tactical on Instagram and on Facebook.com/ChappieTactical. As far as this weekend, tomorrow at Scambia River Gun Club, we have our bench rest precision rifle match. And then on Sunday, a bunch of us are traveling to the Wimbledon of Firearm Ranges, Dothan Gun Club in Dothan, Alabama, at the Shoot USPSA. And then our very first USPSA match at Escambia River is happening March 5th. Of course, it was supposed to be in February, but we had to cancel due to the weather. So we're making the final preparations to get it ready. So You know, if anybody's in the area or they want to shoot USPSA, come out to the Scambia River Gun Club. March 5th, we have a couple slots still open. And if not, they can go to practicescore.com and just type in the Scambia River Practical Shooters, and we will pop up online.
There you go. And if you missed any of that, that's where we hit podcasts.
Exactly.
All right.
So, yeah, thanks for having me, Greg. Bianchi, you have a great weekend, and I'll talk to y'all next week.
We will do it next week, absolutely. So
you
this
too,
has been
sir.
An amazing Thanks, Bianchi. This has been an amazing week on Action Radio. We've talked to Australia. We've talked to Canada. We have a Bill of Rights in process, you know, where we are the cutting edge of freedom in terms of citizen legislation that we're bringing to the truckers in these countries. Our own truckers here are going to be taking our legislation to Congress and the media. They will be presenting it there. Hopefully, they'll be talking to members of Congress directly. And so we are changing everything. And as Action Radio is doing what I hoped it would, to be able to have citizens, you know, write the laws and advocate the laws that they consent, that we consent to be governed by. Hopefully this will change, you know, pretty much everything. And we'll find out soon. Anyway, Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our website, soon to be restored, I hope, is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. Want to contribute to us? It's givesendgo.com/actionradio. And if you want to sponsor the show, I can create advertising for you. Just email me, greg@writeyourlaws.com. We will do it again Monday. No idea yet. See what the weekend brings between Ukraine and the truckers. It's going to be a busy show Monday, and we'll do it again then.